Welcome to this EURETINA Independent Medical Education Podcast, supported by Roche and Apellis. This two-part series on the management of diabetic macular edema is presented by Professor Eduardo Medina, Chairman of Ophthalmology at the University of Padova in Italy, and Dr. Dina Tsur, Senior Ophthalmologist and Retina Specialist at the Tel Aviv Sieraski Medical Center, Israel. In this episode, they turn their attention to managing DME patients, including treatment approaches, what to do if a patient is unresponsive, and the key issue of undertreatment, as well as how patient communication helps to improve treatment compliance. There's a lot to learn in a few minutes, so without further ado, we will hand over the discussion to Professor Medina and Dr. Tsur.
Hello, good morning. This is another video interview in the EURETINA IME program. And this is today dedicated to an intriguing topic, we say, the DME fundamentals in diagnosis and treatment. I'm Eduardo Medina, and today I'm joined by Dr. Dina Tsur from Israel, who is an expert in the treatment of medical retinal disorders. And we have decided together to discuss the best practices for diagnosis and treating DME and sharing with you our opinions based on the current literature and our long experience. We will follow the idea of implementing what is current in the diagnosis of the disorder with the current technologic techniques and the most important debates in the treatment. What do you think about, Dina, about this topic?
It sounds exciting. I'm glad to join you and thank you very much for the invitation.
Dina, we agreed about the approach, the diagnostic approach, and it is quite fixed, and probably it will improve in the future with new modalities. But now the most important point is probably after the diagnosis is the management, because something has changed in the last years. And when did you decide really in clinical practice with a patient in front of you to begin the treatment? Why you approach and say them treatment is necessary?
I think the first important thing is to understand what bothers the patient. If he has decrease in vision or impairment, metamorphopsia that are explainable by the diabetic maculopathy. Because as you mentioned, in the last years, we have new information about patients with preserved vision that should be managed differently and might be observed closely as long as the vision is good, even though you have significant central involving diabetic macular edema. Then another consideration, of course, is the diabetic retinopathy severity, external from the macula. And then I think the most important step is to understand what the patient's condition is, explain that it's a chronic disease, that to restart treatment, you need to adhere to the treatment plan that we built, if there are any systemic comorbidities that need to be taken into consideration, any major cardiovascular events that prevent some treatment or another. And then together with the patient decide on the best treatment approach for his case.
And So you are considering the local situation from the visual acuity point of view, the DME in the consideration of this the stage of diabetic retinopathy. So, and what do you think about considering also the fellow eye? Because if you have a patient with near normal visual acuity, progressing edema, but normal, and the other eye's visual acuity was lost for undertreated macular edema, maybe that's a contributing element to suggesting beginning the treatment immediately.
Yeah, that's a very important point because it's a systemic disease. And even if there's asymmetry, we need to consider that what happened to one eye might concern the other. Patients with one eye left might be also more cautious, more concerned about their vision, their sight. And of course, in these cases, we'll be much more proactive and more concerned about early treatment. And the last thing maybe that we need to take into consideration, even in patients with preserved vision, is the structural changes that we can already identify on the different imaging modalities that might change our approach.
Yeah. In patient with AMD, we remember that the age is different and so on. We say when we decide to treat for an active neovascular membrane that we are discussing with the patient that our goal is to improve vision, but probably we will be able to maintain the visual function. And a young patient in the working age with the diabetic macular edema may ask you, which is my prognosis on a long term? What may you answer at the baseline, or you need to follow during the treatment?
I think it depends, first of all, what is the diabetic retinopathy severity, at which stage do we catch the patient, what changes have already occurred, because as we discussed earlier, there are biomarkers that teach us that there is some irreparable damage, and you have to talk to the patient about it, so the expectations will be accordingly. But I think if we catch a patient early and he's ready to improve a systemic condition, and we will monitor and treat him intensively, he has a very good prognosis even in the long term with the available drugs today.
Yeah, I think that now entering the treatment scenario, that we know that it is the well agreed that the gold standard to the treatment is the treatment with intravitreal anti-VEGF. Do you agree, Dina?
I do.
Okay. So the treatment with anti-VEGF intravitreal is going on in the last more than 10 years successfully. But we have seen that some new drugs entered the market during this time, and very recently some other will enter the market. Because one of the problems, and particularly in a population as this one, in the young diabetic patients with macular edema in a working age, you cannot treat, I think, and I hope you agree, monthly, for example. So now the so-called concept of durability is becoming quite important. Which is your opinion about this?
In every macular condition, we are happy about any durable agent that is coming into the market. But for the diabetic patients, it's even more a game changer, because they have so much treatment burden related to the comorbidities of diabetes, not only to the eyes. We know that those are the patients that spend the most time with medical appointments. As you said, they're in working age. And it affects not only them, but also the caregivers. So I think this will really be a game changer, even more if the part of the drugs have some doable actions, not only attacking the VEGF in the eye, and this might change also the efficacy. So I'm very optimistic about this, and also for the health systems, but of course for the patient.
Okay. And the situation and the treatment with anti-VEGF, we decided that it is changing and improving following the patient request to have a longer duration or something else, and it's quite important. But on the other side, we can say that there is a phrase now in our meetings, it is beyond anti-VEGF, meaning that some new drugs have different elements inside the same molecule or with different molecules. Okay, in DME, we know that the anti-VEGF is working well in 50 to 60% of patients, but the different statistics are showing that at least in 40% patients are not adequately responding. And therefore, which is your idea in switching a different molecule, switching to a different pharmacologic category, switching in something else? When do you switch?
I think it's a major issue in diabetic macular edema, the non-response or insufficient response to anti-VEGF, because we know from just lately, Jennifer Sun and the DRCNet published, looking at the DRCR I and T and B, that about 30% are non-responders in terms of vision and anatomy. So it's an immense number of patients. And what I usually do is, I think it's in line with the retina recommendations, we tend to wait 3 to 6 months of monthly treatment until we decide that the patient is non-responsive or insufficient responder. And we don't do any invasive testing, but I think we can draw the information that we have efficiently suppressed the VEGF in the eye and still the edema is not responding. So other pathomechanisms are going on in the eye, which is mostly inflammation. And I think then it's time to switch. I tend to switch to another drug class because, of course, there are always patients that respond better to one than to another anti-VEGF agent. But I think it's really non-response, then it's probably inflammation going on in the eye, and then there is a point to switch to steroids if the patient has no contraindication, of course.
In any case, before switching, are you waiting the loading dose at least, or you may begin before the end of loading dose, monthly loading dose?
So as you said, loading dose depends on how you look at it. And it also depends on the requirements of the country, of the health insurance, when you can switch to a second line treatment. So I live in Israel, so we need to give 4 monthly injections of anti-VEGF before we define or determine a non-response. And I think mostly if you don't see any response after 4 months, it's unlikely that you will see a big change after 2 or 3 more injections. But also 6 months, I think, is acceptable, except of maybe certain cases where you really don't want to wait.
Okay, we decided that at a certain moment, because the patient is really unresponsive to the anti-VEGF different drugs we have, confident using corticosteroid, when I decide and balancing that the treatment is necessary to a patient because he or she is really unresponsive to anti-VEGF, and I think that the so-called neuroinflammatory component as shown by OCT biomarkers is quite important because we need to treat a disorder. And favorable comment is that compared to the original registration studies, at least in our practices, the complications we had or the side effects, particularly the side effects related with the corticosteroid to the intraocular pressure, are less common from a statistical point of view than we have. Is this your experience or do you have a different experience from this?
No, I strongly agree with this. So we gathered together with an international group 6,000 injections of dexamethasone implant, and the results were better in terms of safety than in the registration studies, as you said. So I'm quite confident with this as well. Of course, the patients need follow-up to identify complications when they come up.
Okay. And is any idea or your opinion about the number of people missing injections? So is it in the DME population so common as sometimes happens in AMD patients that the regimen is not followed in the right way?
Yeah, this is an issue in all the injection clinics, but mainly with diabetic macular edema or diabetic patients. I think one of the reasons is that they are younger, they have more appointments, medical appointments than other maculopathy patients. And they're the sickest patients when they already have diabetic macular edema. They certainly have other comorbidities related to the disease. And I think it's a lot related also to the patient compliance is a lot related to the patient education that we provide to the patients. A lot of time it's when they miss one appointment and the others are missed as well, because it's like a chain reaction, because the treatment plan cannot be withheld. And one concern is that we maybe as physicians talk less about it. is the fear of injection among younger patients. I think this needs to be much more discussed, and we need to put more efforts in educating patients or giving room for this discussion.
So I agree that we need more time probably about this. One advantage or one different situation toward the other maculopathies, probably patients with DME do not necessarily need a caregiver during the treatment, because the situation is generally a little bit, we hope, a little bit more better when we begin the treatment, because the idea, as we stressed before, is that we need to begin the treatment before the loss, a dramatic loss of visual acuity. This is essential, because many studies have shown, and the clinical practice is showing us, that you treat in an efficient way, you maintain this relationship with the patient, show not only saying to him, but showing that treatment may improve visual acuity, and visual acuity may be maintained, and the number of injections is decreasing a long time, we may obtain more compliance, or better compliance from the this kind of approach. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think the better the patient understands the condition, and the course of the disease and what is expected, and the compliance will be better, the adherence will be better, and there will be less disappointment on the other side.
Okay, I think that we have discussed probably the most important points about the diagnosis and management of diabetic macular edema. The diagnosis is quite well established. The new technologies are improving our possibilities and allowing us to identify the what we are calling now phenotypes, different aspects of one disorder, to try to better balance the treatment approach. And the treatment is quite well organized. We cannot say that the story of treating DME is finished. No, we have seen that from the initial unique anti-VGF, we are now modifying to allow to have a better compliance, to have a good response in all the population, but anti-VGF are not enough about this. And probably in the future, we will be able to better treat this disorder using combined treatment, for example. Your final idea about this, Dina. Do you think that DME will be a disorder for combined treatment in the future, or just one molecule?
I think DME is a good candidate for a combination of treatments because of the complex pathophysiology.
Okay, so we thank you, people who followed Dr. Dina Zur and myself. We hope that this video interview will improve your current practice, which is the goal of this program. And we thank you, and bye-bye. Dina,
thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Some really helpful and practical insights there from Professor Medina and Dr. Tsur. Our thanks to both for such an insightful discussion with such practical points. Our thanks also to Apelles and Roche for their support of this Euretina Independent Medical Education podcast. In case you missed it, in part one of this series, Professor Medina and Dr. Tsur covered diagnosis of DME. We hope you'll join us again for another podcast in the 2023 Euretina Independent Medical Education podcast series, which also includes discussions on geographic atrophy and neovascular AMD management.